So this is part two of a PATHWIC teleconference on lecture 204, What is the Path? And what I'm talking about now is the actual how-to of PATHWIC process. And what I was speaking about was the fact that after we have done a certain amount of work, that it doesn't take all our effort. For instance, let me give some specific examples. If you're in financial trouble and you ask somebody for financial help, or you get a self-help book on fixing your finances, they might tell you, for one thing, clean up your desk, organize your paperwork, pay the bills you can pay, and then make a pile of the bills you can't pay. Well, that's the equivalent of picking up the loose sticks in the game of pickup sticks. It doesn't take that much effort. It gets some things out of the way. It organizes the material and perhaps gives you a central focus on the work that you have to do. Same thing happens when you are cooking. You know, this is a very complex recipe. How do I go at it? Well, why don't you see what you have in the fridge? Then see what you have to buy. Then see how many, you know, break it down. And so you can see how much work there's going to be versus how much work you may not have to do. And then, of course, you make a decision. Is it worth it? What I have to do, go shopping, do preparation, do I have the time to make this particular meal? If you went into a garage and tried to clean it, the first thing you might do is take everything out. Then you could put it back in a more organized fashion. But at least you might take some things out. Those down-to-earth practical suggestions are valid also in the area of personal growth and transformation. One of the, by making a list of the things that you do well in your life and the things that are a problem, the reason that can be so terribly, terribly important is you need to see that you have success in some areas. It is important to know that you're not a complete failure. Even complete failures have acquired skills. Even complete failures, you know, there's always something that you can look at in terms of being useful once you get the problem areas fixed in your life. So we don't want to forget the positive just because we're working on the negative. And when we're working on the negative, we need to be very careful, because it may be have become a negative because we have ignored the source of the problem. And that's why I referred to the concept of a blind spot. So, well, how do you work with a blind spot? If you split this into two approaches, one is you get some help. You can get help from your friends, from your family, from other people that study the materials with you, from therapists, from PATHWIC helpers. You can get another set of eyes to help you look at the situation. And that is recommended very, very often because it's so fast. You know, I walk into a room and I look around and say, I don't understand why this room is cluttered. But a friend comes in and I say, could you tell me why this room is cluttered? And they're making a list, because to them, because they're not attached to the things in the room, it's very easy for them to see what the clutter consists of. And they don't invisibly say, I'm not even going to consider the items that I won't get rid of. I'm only going to consider the items I will get rid of. They don't go through that kind of mental gymnastics. They just look around and say, boy, you got to get rid of this and this and this and this and this. Same thing happens when we work with others on spiritual transformation. Why do I have this problem? They bring you another set of eyes. They're able to show you things that you have overlooked consciously or unconsciously. So that's the track of working with people. You can also work with a blind spot on your own. Is it harder? That may be, but it's a personal privilege, whether you wish to work alone or with others. Some people don't have the opportunity to work regularly with others. So, how do you work with a blind spot when you're working all by yourself? Number one, you take a look at what the problem is and try to delineate it. Then you may read materials such as the Patrick Lectures, but this works for any discipline. And you try to read about some of the lectures that have to do with your issue. And you notice where there's an incongruity, where the guide will say something that you don't agree with or that you simply don't do. And then take a look at the way the guide says things might go or how you might do things and the way you are doing things. And the blind spot will show up in the areas where you become angry or upset, where there's an emotional reaction that is basically like a dog barking trying to make you not go there. Blind spots don't want to be found. That's why they have become blind spots. So an emotional reaction to a suggestion can indicate that there's something there that you should be looking at. And your emotional reaction may be a way of your unconscious saying, I don't want to. And then you use rationalization and justification so you don't look like a raving idiot. Another way to look at blind spot is to look at the evidence. If you ask why, I'm going to be dramatic here. If your spouse is leaving you, and you say, I do not understand. They simply walked out the door, and there is no reason for it. If you can develop an objective eye, and you can go back and you can look at what's happened in the past 6 months or a year with an objective eye, the evidence is there. Now, this is what would happen if you asked other people for their opinion. They would tell you all this evidence that you may have been ignoring for the past 6 months to a year. And when they give you that feedback, you may find that it irritates you, which is the other thing that I described. So you can look at a blind spot by going back and looking at objective evidence and seeing how it was there and you didn't see it. And then saying, why didn't I see it? What was I thinking? What was I doing? How did I manage to ignore so much evidence that something was going to happen? Where was my attention? Where was my focus? Because it wasn't on that. It was someplace else. So in working with others, when I work with others in the Pathwork process, what I've been talking about is to develop a practice of finding the places where we have been unconscious or where we have blind spots. Secondly, to... In pathwork process, it's very useful to learn from the work of others. Learning from the work of others is the equivalent of reading a book that changes your life. Seeing a piece of art, it changes your attitude. Watching a film that gives you an emotional experience that shifts your perception of the world. Working with others and seeing their struggle can teach you a huge amount about yourself. So working with others is not just about working in a group with other people. It's also about allowing the conversations and actions of the people in your life to actually be felt by you, to become porous, to become open to what is going on around you. To notice what other people are doing and then reflecting what that means to you. So to practice finding the blind spots, to learn from the work of others, and to notice where we are resistant, closed, and negative. Okay? Now, one of the reasons the guide recommends that we do this kind of work with at least one other person. Number one, it's hard to see our own stuff. Secondly, it's useful to hear other people's feedback and their reflection. But thirdly, issues will manifest more easily and readily in interaction with other people than when you are alone with your own thoughts. So in doing the pathway process, if you are alone with your own thoughts, you may come to a place of peace and rest, and you may think, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong. And then you go out to get the mail, and you trip over a toy in the driveway, and all of a sudden you're angry at your family or the neighbor or the postman, or you get the mail and you're angry at the junk mail people, and you're all walking out to pick up the mail can trigger a dozen emotional reactions. And those emotional reactions are areas where you are not at peace. So what I am saying is that when we work by ourselves with only our own thoughts, we can edit what comes in, how we interpret things, what we interpret. But when we work with other people, we are less able to control the environment. And therefore, we can become triggered in ways that can surprise us and can lead to a deeper learning about ourselves. And this goes into what I said previously about your life and your experience don't lie. If you become easily upset or angry at other people, but you're at peace by yourself, your reality is not that you are a peaceful person. Your reality is someplace in the middle there. There is peace possible within you, but there tends to be rancor and difficulty in engaging with other people. The truth is someplace in the middle there. There is some place where you lose that sense of peace. So when I talked at the beginning, at one point I mentioned that the universe, it's a benign universe, and that God does not punish. And one would say, well, doesn't that mean that we shouldn't be angry at people, and if we're angry, something's wrong? Yes, that is true. But the truth goes deeper than that. It's not just because we're angry, and it's not just because there's a right or wrong, and it's not been named properly, and people just have to fix up their activities, and once the toy is put away or the junk mail is not received, everything will be fine. And that goes into the last stage, that the pathway process is about working with our individual... I'm going to apologize for a second. I skipped something. Let me go back to, if you're at peace in your mind and you go out to pick up the mail and you become very, very angry and you come back and you are able to go into a peaceful state, there's still something to work on there. And what there is to work on, according to pathwork, is that there's a distortion someplace. There's some part of you that, for instance, and I must say for instance, because this is always individual, there is no overwhelming theory to explain why somebody gets angry. But for instance, someone can be at peace with themselves because they feel that they are in control. But the minute they go out into society, they feel that they are at the whim and the mercy of everybody else, and they lose their self sense of center, and they become emotionally activated, and their emotions are somewhat immature, so they tend to act out, which also distresses them. And then they come back into their home, and they sit quietly, and they say, oh, thank God, now I'm calm, now everything is all right. In that scenario, there is a distortion about what life is meant to be like. Life is not designed for every person to sit quietly all by themselves in a room. Life is designed to disturb and disrupt. Now, why would that be? Why would life be designed to disturb and disrupt? Going back to one of the premises of pathwork, because the purpose of being here is not to be happy, per se. The purpose of human life is not to laugh all the time or smile all the time. From a spiritual standpoint, from a deeper place, the purpose of spiritual life is to learn something about ourselves, to learn a deeper truth, to recognize it, and to release it. To stop hanging on to it as if the distortion were true, but to release it, to let it go. From that perspective, what you can learn from this little tiny scenario that I dreamed up of somebody sitting alone, going out, getting disturbed, and coming back, is that they're not comfortable with other people, that that their emotions are not well developed. Well, the more they stay by themselves, their emotions are not going to become more developed. So, in effect, if you've got an immature set of emotions and you are immature at relationships, then the fact that you continue to stay alone will not necessarily develop your ability to be in relationship with other people. And it will not develop your ability to handle both your feelings and the feelings of others. To do that, to develop those skills, you need to go out and be with other people. Maybe not 24/7. Maybe just a little bit at a time. But your task, your deeper task, instead of simply being calm and quiet, would be to interact gradually, as much as you can bear at one time, within some limits, but to experience and interact with other people and allow your relationship skills and your emotions to develop. Why? So that you can choose, so that you can make a conscious choice about whether you want to be with people or whether you actually want to be alone. Because if you really don't have an alternative, if being alone is the only place you can find peace, and being with other people is always difficult, you really don't have a choice. But if you develop the skills to be in relationship, and you develop the way your emotions come out, and how you handle, and how you express yourself, and how you react to others, now you can go out and find a certain level of peace. You can be peaceful in interacting with other people over time, with a little help. Now you have a choice. Now you can have the companionship of people and peace of mind. It's a different flavor than being alone by yourself. But what just suddenly hit me is that's like ice cream. You know, there are a gazillion different flavors of ice cream. If you have never experienced them, you may be unused to the taste. The taste may surprise you or shock you, and so you may go back to vanilla. But once you have explored all the different tastes, we all have our preferences. And all our preferences are different. But once we have explored, we may find that we like our favorite, like vanilla most of the time, but every once in a while we want to experiment. But without knowing what's out there and without practicing being with other people, being in relationship, having feelings come up, having reactions to other people's feelings come up, without having gone through this process and finding a place of peace and calm within interpersonal skills, we really do not have a conscious choice. We wind up being the kind of person that can only find peace alone in a room. So what Pathwork talks about and works about is developing these areas of us that are undeveloped, that are reactive. I don't like people because they're noisy. Well, not always. So, you know, we got to look at why do you think people are always noisy? Well, my experience is that when I go out and I see people, they're always noisy. Well, go to a library. Change your experience. Find some different people to interact with. That rather than saying people are noisy and limiting yourself, if you actively start searching for other alternatives, you will find them. So that kind of covers a lot of this. The lecture itself tends to cover what the 50-50 terminology calls the individual self-sphere. And by that I mean that the lecture covers mask and lower self, negative intention, taking responsibility. And what I've been attempting to cover here is the deeper reality, which is in other lectures as well, and is in this one also, which is the deeper spiritual meaning of recognizing the mask, recognizing the lower self. Why are we doing this? So that's kind of about it. I hope.
Jan, can I run? Can I run something past you?
Sure.
In the reading of this 204, toward the end there, it talks about the vanity and the pride of ego, and as it's a barrier to allowing the inner core expression to be experienced. And I brought up a particular instance earlier in my life that I won't even have to go through in detail on it, but I always come back to that when I see something that might be a little flicker of light toward that, and that is a moment that was that I had a very deep sense of fear about this situation, but there wasn't any way at all that I could get out of going through what was causing that fear without completely running away or killing myself or something like that, you know. So it seemed like, and I've been trying to figure that out before, because I got through that fear. There was that moment that was an experience that transformed from fear into a real interconnectedness to what was going on and coming from another place than the fear there. And when I read this vanity and pride of ego, it seemed to me that it had a meaning there, in that, in a way, at that moment, it may, I kind of remember having offered a little prayer to get through this, but it seemed like that ego at that moment, what I would call threw in the towel. And the other inner core experience expressed itself for quite a while. And then after that experience, which was probably the most outstanding one experience that I had in with this thing, you know, in my life. And then after that was over, it seemed like that the ego, in retrospect, this is what I came up with, the ego again wanted to gain control of the situation and put itself as the cause of that experience. And I realized that because of that, the pride of the ego was a barrier to that experience occurring again, or ongoing, or whatever, you know. And that just seemed kind of like an eye-opener to me when I realized what the pride of the ego meant and what part it plays in acting as a barrier to experience in the inner core.
Yeah. No, that's a good observation. Thank you. Also, what I noticed is it did take some time for you to get that.
Years.
Yeah. That's where I feel most people justify not believing in spiritual law and cause and effect. Because if you look at it before the situation has completely played out, you're only looking at a partial story. And to make the logic work in a partial story, you would have to distort things. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So because we are, if we're spiritual dealings and we're dealing with some very, very deep spiritual issues, we may not know the entire story until the end of our life.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, and this is what I said about when I work with people, I find what you described. I find that with a little bit of time and wisdom and personal search, people very often find completely different meanings to life situations that seemed very negative at the time.
Right, and then the inside of this, carrying the possibility that has that much power and strength, and that's the place, that's what pride of the ego really is, you know. There's a moment of experience in the original positive thing that I was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like the vanity of the ego, as I was thinking about it, might be a reflection of the story of the fall and the original separation.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we deal with in pathwork is that there are many stories of creation, and people of different faiths can be very attached to the particular story their group or culture tells. In the pathwork lectures, the guide explains some of these creation stories differently. I find that there's not a conflict. But for some people, they may feel invested in their belief of the version that they have chosen to accept. What I'm relating this to is that's another example of where there could be some pride and ego.
Oh, that's what I was just getting ready to say, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where I try to come from, I try my best to come from, even though I have specific beliefs myself, is to understand that it's not a matter of right or wrong, and that, to understand why would this be an issue. In other words, I try to look at why the subject came up rather than trying to then look for what's the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I describe as the deeper, working on a deeper level. So instead of concentrating on the superficial of why the topic came up or what the topic is about, but to feel into, is there pride here? Is mm-hmm. there a sense that the ego is at risk? And attempt to address those and be supportive of the person. And that's what I feel like you did for yourself in the example that you are relating.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
you talk about ego a lot, but then to experience what the pride of the ego really means internally or absorb the meaning of that really, really has a different effect, you know.
Yeah. And that's why ultimately this work is it's very individualistic, because your story affected you in a very deep way. And it might be difficult for somebody else to understand why. Well, because that's not their story.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that with this experience, I would be more open to be able to appreciate other people's stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree, Harry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have a question or a sharing or... comment?
This is Leah. Hi. I just want to underscore for Harry's example that what you started with, Harry, that the time it took, or what you noticed, Jen, that it took time to find that pride and the ego involvement, is a process of growth. It's a process of stepping outside of the individual self-sphere or the small reality into a greater perspective, so that you identify something in you that you no longer identified with.
Yeah.
And that's the true growth.
Right, because sheer time alone, you're quite right, just time doesn't work unless you're growing during that time.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, come to think of it, I'm going to take that back. So I agree with that point. One thing that time gives us, even if we don't grow, is an event will lose its immediacy. So one part is what you describe, the growth. And the other is a simple fact that if you felt shame in a moment, shame can be very intense. And we may just need to get away from it and let an hour or a day go by before we can actually summon the courage to address such a painful issue. So time is a factor of growth. It's also a factor of not feeling the life or death immediacy. So what the ego sometimes says is, if I look at this, I will die. But by the next day, they haven't died, and so you are more able to look at it. That is also growth, and yet it's not. It's, I think it's a little bit different, so I'm adding that.
But it seems like the stronger you get in the understanding of the pridefulness of ego, the less time you need for that to occur.
Yes. Yeah. So that's where Leah's point is valid, is if the growth that you can bring allows you to be able to shorten the time instead of just waiting it out until it stops hurting. But if it stops hurting and you haven't grown, you're not going to be able to address it in the way that you would if you had reflected upon it.
The hardest thing, it seems like, has been, and what makes you put it off, is the willingness to admit that you have pridefulness.
Yeah. Because that also feels like death.
Right.
To admit that it's not a perfect situation. So, Leah, did you want to add anything else?
No.
Okay.
Thanks, Leah.
Good. You're welcome.
Leah is also a helper. She's in Northern California, so...
They need a lot of help out there, don't they?
They're getting it.
You're right.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Thanks to the governator.
I don't... Don't pick on Arnie.
Yeah.
So does anybody else have something they'd like to contribute or share with, or perhaps we're just done? I guess we're done. I want to thank you for putting up with my froggy voice, and especially, you know, those of you who are on now and many others who have helped me by being a wonderful audience for these teleconferences, bringing up some really fascinating questions sometimes, and inspired me to keep doing them. So I want to thank you very much.
Well, Jan, I really appreciate all the what you put into this over these months and years, I guess now, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get into the any more doing any more of these. You're going to start another session?
I am. I that's what the emails that I've been sending out. I'm working to. So let me say a word about that. And I heard somebody else wanted to say something too, so I'm bookmarking that another person wants to add a comment. Because these were recorded, because they were put on the internet, it naturally made people a little bit less willing to discuss or ask questions. I've got to admit, it's been scary for me to make these presentations and put them on the internet. So it kind of squashed the natural spontaneity that people might have had, number one. Number two, the real work is individual, and it was never my expectation that people should or would bring their personal issues to this forum, and yet that's where the work is. So now that we've got some, now that I have these presentations out on the internet for people who just want to know what Pathwork is about and to hear my spin on it. Now I want to move back into the actual work of working with people on an individual basis. And that work cannot be public. That work needs to be encased, needs to be contained in a, for instance, a group of people who get to know each other and who feel confident and who can learn by listening as well as speaking and working on their issues. So that will be my focus from this point forward. So it's not that I'm going to not do these teleconferences, but I'm now going to focus on getting groups together who may be able to use this format, because it's all they've got, to do more personal work. So I think it's an and instead of an or. But at some point, if somebody finishes up the 31 teleconferences online, then they should be ready to go on to personal work. They've got the lectures, they got these, and they would probably be looking for a group anyway. So I think that it's more a matter of the form maturing, and we've done as much as we can in this format, and my hope is to deepen it. And someone else had a comment, or I heard another voice behind Harry. So does that answer your question, Harry?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
Yeah. And is there anyone else?
Okay, well, maybe I can just say, Jen, thank you. Just a big thank you to your giving and your teaching and your sharing that what your spirit does with the teaching of the Pathwork.
Thank you.
Thank you also for the clarity with which you present and the examples that you give and the many deep teachings that that go on and on. Thank you.
Very welcome. Appreciate having had you as part of the group. So, that'll be the end of the presentation. Thank you. And I'll be in contact with all of you at a later time.
Thanks, Jan.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good evening.
And healing to your throat and hugging.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.